The Augustin Hosinga Show with your host Augustin Hosinga.
Smack the shit out your bitch ass midget girlfriend, nigga.
Welcome back to the Agostino Zynga Show with I, your host, Agostino Zynga, and this is episode number 768. That is 768 of the Agostino Zynga Show with I, your host, Agostino Zynga, and I hope you're doing well wherever this lovely pod may find you. I hope you are all doing swimmingly. I had my first interaction with somebody in the gymnasium today that could have been described as them attempting to vibe me out, to bro me out, to chest me out, whatever that flipping term is. And, you know, it was an interesting exchange because when I'm usually in there and I'm doing my back squats, because my ankles and my thigh is not as open as they should be, right, I still try and do the best I can, make sure my toes are pointed forward and my knees are splayed wide, but I've still got some way to go in terms of my mobility. So in order to give me some extra help and assistance, I sometimes get a plate and I put it under my heels to give me some, you know, some clearance so that I can squat with my kind of toes forward and kind of push my knees out, you know, the standard cues that you all know and love. Well, sometimes I do it and I'll tend to go and do it with a 10 plate. And I've noticed, and again, maybe it's just my gym, I think all gyms are probably the same, I've noticed the 10 plate is one of the most popular ones in terms of the ones everyone uses. I think people use a lot of fives and tens in general because, you know, I'm assuming people, you know, find a barbell sort of quite heavy. So to put a five on or a 10 on either side is probably enough to kind of get a good sweat on. Well, I take one. So because I've taken one and they come in pairs and there's probably only like six, probably 10 pairs, I'd say. And I've taken one. It leaves one odd one. So naturally someone's looking for it, but usually it's not a problem. Usually it isn't an issue. Today, I guess it was, mostly because I think what people usually do, I've noticed this a lot as well, which is really annoying. You'll have your weights prepared, right? You'll put your stuff that you need to use to the side, but because they can't be bothered to look, they can't be bothered to go and like scurry around and try and find it. They want to take what you've prepared. It's like, nah, I went and gathered all this shit from all over the place because no one puts their stuff back, right? It's a hood. It's the ends. No one's going to put their stuff back. There's signs about putting your things back. This isn't a, you know, because I remember in a CrossFit box, like people would like go out their way. They were running to put their stuff back to show off to the fucking teacher. Look at what I did. Look at what I did. Look at what I did. But in regular gyms, no one does that. No one actually puts their things back. So when you're trying to find stuff, you have to go like all around the flipping place. You find stuff in the corner over there, over here, everywhere. So I just find it really annoying when you've gone to the effort to find all your things that you need to do your little workout. And then someone's like, oh, can I use this? Like, nah, bro. No, you can't. Even though I'm not using it right now and you can tell me something else. No, you can't touch this. Because I went to go and scurry all around the place to go and find this. You go and find your own thing. And then they give you like a weird look like, oh, you're not even using it. It's like, yeah, it doesn't matter. I went and got it. You go and get your own thing. So I had that kind of interaction where it was like a bit of static. And I just had to like, because usually I'm, you know, whenever somebody asks me, I'm not going to lie. Usually I do acquiesce. I'm not really that bothered. Like if I'm not using it in that moment, I'd rather just let someone use it because, you know, there's nothing worse than being in your flow, being in your momentum. And then ask somebody, hey, can I use it? Like, no, it's like, oh, you know what I mean? But I'm also not somebody that talks to somebody. So, you know, these people are going out of their way to talk to me. They're going out of their way to communicate. And let's be honest and say, you know, sometimes when you communicate with people, you're not going to get the answer you want. You know, it's a flip of a coin. Sometimes you get the answer you want. Sometimes you won't get the answer that you want. So you're kind of playing with fire. But I found that interaction kind of hilarious because the guy kind of had a bit of an attitude. Like, oh, can I take the 10? Like, obviously not. I'm standing on it. Do you know what I mean? I know I'm resting right now, but obviously you can't take it because I'm fucking using it. And then he kind of had a bit of an attitude. And of course, he ended up finding another 10 at another rack. But it's like, bruh. Maybe first look around first before just go into the easy option that happens to be right in front of you just because it is, and then trying to make me give you my thing that I went to work really hard to go get. It's just, I don't know. Humans are fucking annoying. Now I'm completely understanding why, because I have to be honest, like, part of like going to a gym is amazing. It's like the, I won't say the social, it's kind of like social aspect, but it's not really, because I don't really talk to people, but it's semi-social. As in, you get to see people, right? You get to see people, especially if you're like a work at home type or you stay at home like I do all the time. You get to see other humans. So it's good in that regard. But I now understand why a lot of the fitness, weightlifting influencers and content creators I watch online, why they just can't be bothered and they just end up always, you know, setting up their own shed. They end up kind of, you know, building their own shed and building their own home gym. I get it now. They go to all the effort to actually get a, you know, a garage converted into a gym, whatever it may be. Like, a lot of people are doing it. It's becoming like a big, I guess it's always been a thing, but it's becoming a bigger trend. I think in the last few years, I'm seeing loads of really big weightlifting influencers basically do build outs of like, you know, home gyms and shit. And now I get why they do it, because honestly, dealing with randoms is so annoying. Everyone has such a weird way of doing things, like, and maybe it's not weird because it's just their way, but it's just, everyone's just bizarre, you know, bizarre human beings. So you're having to deal with all that energy. You just want to do your workout and go. And, you know, there must be also a beauty, because I'd love to do that one day, like have my own home gym and be able to like work out without headphones. As much as I enjoy it, it's almost, you know, it kind of cuts you off from your environment. It'll be nice to hear what I sound like when I'm breathing and shit and all that malarkey, because I've always got my headphones on. I've always got my flipping Beats Pro on, all my noise cancelling over ears. So, you know, you don't really hear much of yourself, the grunts, the groans, the weird sounds that you make when you squat, like the things that you don't notice. So I would actually like to hear that if I've got a chance to have my own place. But, you know, for the time being, I have to share it with other, you know, flipping civilians, you know, or other paws, like Tom Segura would say. And it's a bit of a nightmare. It's a bit of a nightmare. I saw this video clip, actually, of Latto in a club with Kevin Hart and Usher. And this is legitimately one of my nightmares. And actually a revelation, or no, one of my nightmares, but also pretty clear example of what I probably look like when I'm in a club these days. Because I've always had this nightmare that if you ever walked into a club and you saw me and I was standing in a corner somewhere, I'd come across weird because I'm just standing in the corner, or I'm standing right at the back with my arms folded, you know, stroking my chin like a fed or like a literal chin stroker. But in some occasions, I think I just look like this. I just look probably tired. That's probably what I look like in this video of Kevin Hart in the flipping club with flipping Latto and Usher. I probably just look knackered, you know, like Kevin Hart does in this video. Nothing even crazy. He just looks tired. Let me play the video for you. There's Usher. There's Latto. She's having a blast. She's having a fucking blast. So's Usher. Kinda. Look at Kevin Hart. I honestly think that's what I wish I probably looked like Usher. I wish I had, you know, that's what I came across as, like just the old guy that you're maybe having a blast and now you're chilling. I love the puffer hat. But I think in actuality, I probably have more similar face and demeanor to Kevin Hart. That's probably what I end up looking like in a club. I'm sure of it. That's what I'm actually looking like. The greys and the beard and all sorts. Literally just doing the thousand eye, you know, the thousand yard stare. He's not even looking at anybody. He's not even trying to scope any baddies. He's just literally thinking about the way home. He's thinking about if that store's open on the way home. He's thinking if he should pass through flipping Popeyes or go to fucking Chick-fil-A. He's thinking whether or not his wife is up or not. Is he going to have time to see his kids before he goes to sleep? Is his laptop charged? That's what he's probably thinking about in his head right now, which I've had the thought of in my head. Or sometimes, you know what the worst thing is? You know what the worst thing is? When you're in a club and you start to think about, should I get another drink? Should I have another bump? Should I have another line? Should I take a bit more of this bill? Because you're thinking you need something to give your kick up the ass. Be like, hold on. I'm not in a mood. Like, I'm clearly not, like, he's probably had a few drinks in him already. It's still not doing anything. So those other things aren't really going to do anything either, but you're kind of tricking your brain to believe that it will help, but it's not going to help. So you're just kind of like mulling over it in your head. And then you're thinking, oh, okay, cool. So should I just stay and just chill? But then the young person next to you, which happens to be Lato, is having a fucking blast. Look at her. She's vibing. She's singing along to all the words of the rap tune because I guess it's one of her songs. She's not even sweating a single. There's not a single bead of sweat on her, right? She's wearing some cotton. She's got a full face of makeup, but she's not sweating. She's just having a blast, as you do when you're like, what, 25, 26. Absolutely loving fucking life. Stunting, having a good time, showing off the pearly whites. The fucking diamonds are dancing. You know, having a blast. And then to the side of her, she has Usher, who's, you know, he's doing an okay job of staying in touch, you know, staying attuned. But the one that's really a reflection on what it's actually like to party with youngsters is Kevin Hart. That's what it's actually really like in real life. That's what your scenario. And I've had many, many of those scenarios in my life. Honestly, many, 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 many. Too many to flip and mention. To the point where you're like, should I just hang it all up? Should I just decide to, like, you know, hang up my fucking magnums, you know, put my fucking rave boots to one side, write my fucking retirement, you know, caption over there on IG and just let it be? Because nobody wants to be this guy in a club. But unfortunately, all of us are heading in that direction. We are all heading into this direction where we end up looking like Kevin Hart standing next to Lato in the club. I think this might be Miami during Miami Design Week. I think so. I'm not too sure because I think all the celebrities are out there at the moment because, you know, it's Miami Design Week. And, you know, Kevin Hart's just out here trying to focus, trying to remember if he's got his charger. Should he call his assistant for that thing? Does he have an email he's got to respond to? He's just all over the place. That's the reality of it when you're out there. It's fucking difficult. But I like it. I'm not going to lie. I think it's a good thing. I think every, you know, you're meant to have phases in your life. You're meant to have times when you're, you know, super lit and going crazy. As Rihanna mentioned, she had a time when she was, you know, letting the nipple go free, you know, having a fucking, the whole snatch out and shit. Now that she's a mum with a couple of kids and shit, she's probably like, you know what? I'm going to chill on that side of things. So I completely understand. I completely understand. So solidarity with Kevin Hart for all the other old fucks in the club who are still trying to hold it down and still trying to keep up with the kids. It's fucking difficult out there, but keep your head up. Keep your fucking head up. Keep your fucking head up. Next, we got this. This is a random one. This is about Lana Del Rey. So Lana Del Rey, during Coachella, decided to blast one of her ex-road managers, which was a bit bizarre, to be completely honest. I'm not going to lie. At the time, I remember seeing it, and I was a bit perturbed as to why did she decide to bring this onto the big stage of Coachella. But I guess because of the performance and because of the entrance, and I guess on her side, she's basically suggesting that the manager quit because they didn't agree with the new design and artistic direction Lana Del Rey wanted to go on. So let me just tell you what it was. So Lana Del Rey has some choice words for her former tour manager. On April 19th, the video game singer 38 shared a lengthy Instagram post expressing gratitude to everyone who made her 2024 Coachella performance so memorable. She says, "Thank you for fucking everything. Jack and John, Billy for showing up for me, and the band for just killing it and spending months on Sylma in 40 degree warehouse to the point that it was so cold that I caught laryngitis that literally just left a few hours before I hit the stage because Tessa De Pietro spent 2 hours lifting that cough remotely through her body intuitive skills just minutes before the showtime. Wally Crowder for all your badass bikes, every stunning dance on stage, and Alex for his beautiful choreography, my stunning free singers who danced and sang their asses off in style and high matching boots, Judah and Chelsea." She then shifted her tone as she thanked Emily, referring to Emily Holt for taking over as tour manager duties after Pete quit for no reason after 15 years, appearing to shade her former manager, Pete Abbott. Del Rey alleged he was butthurt that I got 10 comp bikes for free from Wally and decided he was more of a stage designer than a tour manager. Never got a phone call, probably never will. Still grateful for 15 years though. No worries, 37 days was more than enough time to put together an entire headline set by ourselves. No stressful at all. Way to go, Emily. You fucking killed it with grace. So, you know, while bigging up this Emily woman who's a new tour manager, she also dunked on this former one. Now, the former manager did reply, courtesy of TMZ, and it just makes me think, in general, what's happened to society? Why can't we have conversations? Why can't we pick up the phone and talk to each other? Why do we have to do everything through social media? You know, it's so bizarre. Like, this manager's like a nobody. He's like an He's like an industry person. He's not even that front facing, I'd imagine, unless you're like super into, you know, Lana Del Rey lore. You would never know who he is. So why did she feel the need to blast him on a very big social media page when she could have just called him and asked him, hey, why did you quit? You know, it's not that difficult. But anyway, the manager did reply, and he replied as follows. He said, a courtesy of TMZ, hey, Lana, I just wanted to clarify some things for my perspective. It's not about the bikes or any of that. I've always supported your vision and creativity. The decision to step away was more about feeling like my role was changing drastically without much discussion. I love managing your tours for 15 years, but I started to feel like my input was being overlooked, especially when it came to production and stage design. I wasn't just upset about the bikes. It was more than the direction that we're heading in. I wanted to talk through these changes and how we could work together to find the best solutions, but it seemed like those conversations never happened. It's important to me to feel valued and heard in my role, and unfortunately, that wasn't the case anymore. I'm grateful for the incredible journey we had together over the years and wish you all the best for your future projects. If you ever want to talk things through, I'm here. Best, Pete. For Pete, it's obviously good exposure because everybody knows who his name, and everyone knows that he was, you know, heavily involved in, you know, not only managing Lana, but obviously some of her, you know, design and artistic stuff. And he kind of, for what it sounds like, he was kind of like a manager and also a creative director. So that's a pretty good, you know, look for him, because everyone knows his name. He's become more vocal. He's become more visible. But if you're Lana Del Rey, surely at your grown age, if you're 38 years old, you should be able to pick up the phone and, you know, have a word. But I think this speaks to a growing trend in society overall. We all don't have conversations. We love to subtweet. We love to sub Instagram. We love to maybe even text, but we don't actually have grown up conversations when we actually have a disagreement with somebody. Like, hey, I didn't like what you did that day. That thing that you said the other day didn't land well with me. Bloody, when you mentioned the other thing, what did you actually mean? Like, we don't actually have upfront conversations. That's probably why ghosting is so popular. That might explain it. Ghosting has become so popular across the board in friendship, relationships, workplace, educational, probably. People just prefer to do that because it's easier, quote unquote, than actually having that hard conversation with somebody, looking them in the eye and saying, hey, this is why I did this. This is why I did this. Or unfollowing somebody, right? Ghosting, unfollowing, blocking is much easier than just having a conversation, which is the hardest thing to do. I guess to counter that, some people would say, oh, I don't owe everybody an explanation for the things that I do. Fair. But I think if you were friends before, if you were colleagues before, yeah, you do kind of owe that person a conversation. You do. I'm sorry. You owe that person some words. You don't just owe them just like, you know, blocking their number, deleting them, refusing to speak to them, or just ignoring them completely, you know, or not picking up the phone or speaking through social media. Like, come on, bro. You owe that person a bit more, especially this person who's worked with Lana for 15 years. That's probably 15 years of her, you know, that's basically since she started her career, essentially. So you were there during a really important part of her career. You could say you were definitely responsible for helping her get to where she is at. Obviously, her talent is the most important thing, but you definitely played a role. Yeah, you definitely deserve a conversation. I think you definitely deserve a conversation. So it was kind of poor from Lana Del Rey to treat the guy like that. Maybe there's more to this, you know, maybe there's more layers to this. Maybe it's not just what they're talking about. But either way, you know, it was a weird thing that I saw happening in real time. But big up Lana Del Rey anyway. She still smashed it at Coachella. So, an update regarding Grimes. Allegedly, Grimes is saying that she's going to make a comeback. Grimes is really eager to prove to everybody that that performance that she did during Coachella week number one was a flip, was a one-off occasion. She decided to tweet earlier that who's ready for Coachella weekend two? I'll cap the disarray at a maximum 10 seconds per song. I don't know if there's ever been more rehearsed or fine-tuned Grimes set, and I made another Blackpink remix for good measure. I love that she's saying these things as a way to kind of get a pat on the back. Bruh, this is the bare minimum. You're meant to rehearse. You're meant to fine-tune your sets. Like, there was time when I was DJing often that I would sometimes even go as far as recording my set. I would play through the songs, just kind of like give it a rough idea. I wouldn't go through and mix every record like I was going to mix in the club, but I'd kind of do the rough outline. So I'd record it so I could see how long it was, number one. And then what I would do is that when I would go for a run, I would play that set through my headphones. So I'd listen to it on my run so that I could figure out, okay, cool. Is that song, should I kind of mix that song in 2 minutes? Should I mix it in at 5? Should I reorder stuff? Like, because usually that's what I like to do. I just like to kind of, it's not really about the song, it's more so about the vibe. So if I start off slow, maybe when I put my headphones on and I'll go for a run, I'm like, you know what? No, actually, let's start off really fast and then slow it down. So it's just kind of about sorting out the order and getting the sequencing right. But that's what I used to do back in the day. But then most of the times, you know, everyone, for the most part, I know I have, you have a MIDI controller. And even if you don't have a MIDI controller, you can do it through Rekordbox. Rekordbox has an option where you can basically view your songs like you're looking at it, you know, at CDJ, and you can kind of load the songs and then kind of get a rough idea if they work on it and kind of cue them, mix them together and shit. So there's really no excuse for fucking up nowadays. There isn't. It doesn't exist. If you fuck up, it's more so because you didn't rehearse. You don't know your equipment properly. And even nowadays, I would say, Pioneer CDJs are way easier to use now than they were in the past, in my personal opinion. I think the ones where you had to put the CD in, that version, let's say from number 400 and up, they were really hard to use. Nowadays, these CDJs are super easy to use, especially if it comes to syncing your tunes. They've all got features that allow you to sync your tunes. There's some of them that allow you to unquantize things. So if the beat grid doesn't click it properly, you can mix it in differently. Like, it's pretty decent, like, in terms of what it does. So if you fuck it up, it's just like you didn't watch enough YouTube videos, you didn't read the manual, and you don't give a fuck. So let's play the clip anyway. This actual video is actually pretty cool. The actual funny thing about this as well, this comment she made, I'm also thinking now, I wonder if she did this on purpose. I wonder if this is all part of the plan, because Coachella is now doing 2 weekends. I think there's some of the big festivals do this now anyway, right? They have like weekend one, weekend two. It gives the person a chance to maybe present a new set, a whole complete, I don't know. It depends. It depends on what kind of artist you are. If you do a lot of things, probably, it's probably not worth to try to do a completely different set the second week. It's just going to take too much work. You're just going to fine tune it, right? And whatever it may be. But to do a completely different set from head to bottom, it just doesn't make any sense. That's what I would do probably if I was an actual artist. I'd probably go as far as doing, like, you know, maybe do the B-sides for the first weekend and then the second weekend do all your hits. Obviously, you know, Coachella might not like that, but I think that's what I would probably do. But if you're Grimes, maybe because you fucked up so bad weekend one, the only way is up now. So if you do the bare minimum, you're going to smash it. But maybe she did this on purpose because she's a bit of a mess, right? Looking at her, right? She looks kind of emancipated. She looks like she's on all manners of fucking prescription drugs. God bless those kids that she's raising with Elon Musk and shit. She looks all over the place. So it's probably not a surprise that her DJ sets were all over the place also. It's just what she does. So maybe that's part of the aesthetic or part of the plan. Get on the mic, have that really whiny fucking privileged voice and shit, talking shit, and then the second weekend come through and absolutely kill it with these crazy visuals and crazy remixes and shit, as you said about Blackpink and stuff. Maybe that's a plan. Like, in case you're not seeing what you're seeing here, but basically there's a screen behind her, and it's got an AI, I guess, it's got like a digital video of her, what looks like to be Grimes, and it looks like she's like stuck behind like a glass wall, and she's like dancing behind it. It's a pretty cool visual effect. I'm not going to lie, it looks really impressive. But this is not Coachella. This is another festival. I don't know what festival it is, but it's not Coachella. Yeah, big up Coil in the chat. Yeah, you're right. I shouldn't care, but her lisping about it instead of fixing it pissed me off all the way. Yeah, her getting on the mic was far worse of an offense and kind of just like just kept on ranting than the actual thing. If you just would have played it off and just continued, I don't think, you know what that's funny as well? I don't think most people noticed. I swear to God, most people in the crowd wouldn't have noticed if the songs were double the BPM. They just would have kept on dancing. Most people don't actually know what's happening, you know, when the DJ is playing, unless the song, the music cuts off. So she would have just powered through I think it would have been perfectly fine. But she actually made it worse by getting on the mic. And then when you heard her voice, like, you're like, fucking hell, shut the fuck up, please, if you don't mind. But yeah, whatever this feature is pretty cool. So I'm eager to see if she's going to do this going forward when she does come back for weekend two. Will she have these visuals? Because this will be a pretty good way to redeem yourself, because, you know, people love visuals. I actually like that bar. There's like an LED bar and these spotlights around it. It almost looks like a window or a door's opening and she's trying to get out. That's pretty cool, I'm not going to lie. So people are going to love this, especially that kind of crowd. You know, I think we've seen now like a lot of those EDM type of, you know, big room business techno dudes have done really well during Coachella. They've kind of done some pretty amazing shows. They've done some really pretty amazing fucking visuals. So it wouldn't surprise me if she decides to kind of, you know, let's fucking remind these motherfuckers who I am, because I still can't get, you know, I still can't get my head around personally how somebody has, you know, I wouldn't say, I say maybe, you know, as somebody who's able to create such great albums, you know, as like Visions and Art Angels back in the day, how that person could be so fucking dumb now and so lacking in artistic creativity, merit, and just panache and whatever it may be. It just seems like maybe it's a lifetime ago that she did Art Angels. You know, Art Angels was what? Maybe 2015, 14. Visions was probably 2013, 12 or something. So these albums are like more than 10 years old. So maybe that's probably why we're seeing what we're seeing now. Because it's been 10 years since she dropped anything meaningful. And she's, you know, her circumstances have changed. She's now become basically a billionaire by default of having kids with fucking Elon Musk. So maybe that's the reason why she's not as good anymore. But I just can't get my head around it. Like, how does the person, you know, how does the same person who made fucking, you know, Flesh Without Blood, I don't know, Oblivion, how is that same person the person that's unable to fucking play CDJs and get her tracks to sync on a stage? It doesn't make any sense to me. It really fucking doesn't.
This shit always fucking happens. All my tracks are twice as fast, so I'm not looking very well. But I'm going to keep trying, and I appreciate you guys being here.
She kind of sounds like she's not English, like she's not from America. She kind of sounds almost Bjorkish, but she also kind of sounds a little bit like Caitlyn Jenner's daughter or something. You know, like, I don't know if that makes any sense. She sounds odd. Very, 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 very weird. I know maybe it's a Canadian, like, French accent. Maybe that's probably what it is. Maybe it's a Canadian, maybe. I don't know. But I don't think that's an excuse. She just has this weird, annoying kind of flappy nature, like almost like the kind of the person that you're bumping, the annoying girl you bump into at a hotel somewhere, you know, at a hostel somewhere, right? The one that's like overly sharing all her fucking travel exploits, and, you know, she's wearing those fucking horrible drop crotch yoga pants that people that travel a lot wear. You know, she's got a backpack that's got all these weird trinkets hanging off them. When she walks, it's like a fucking carnival. Bells and little clicks and tambourines all over the place. You know, she crosses her feet and she picks her feet when she's talking to you in a hostel somewhere. Just annoying.
There's never been a grind show without a major technical difficulty. It will continue. And just don't blame me. It's not my fault.
I kind of understand why Elon ditched her. I'm not going to lie. Elon impregnated her and just ran away. I kind of get why Elon did a black guy, you know? I kind of get why Elon did a fucking, you know, a deadbeat on her. Because imagine dealing with her day to day. This is insane. It's like, no, it isn't insane. It happens all the time. Sometimes you're playing and I don't know. Sometimes I've used CJs a lot, but mostly now in recent years because of Pirate Studios. And sometimes you rock up to the place and the person that used it before changed the settings. It's not quantized. When you load the tracks, it automatically starts. All you need to do is a quick Google and you'll figure out the solution. It's usually just holding one button down. And after a while, if you keep running into the same issues, guess what? You have a troubleshoot list of options you have a troubleshoot list of solutions that you can kind of run through to kind of deal with your issue. It's not that deep. So this, her being like shocked, that kind of reaction she has to it is proof that she didn't touch the CDJ. She hasn't touched a pair of CDJs in maybe months, which is again criminal because I don't know about you, but being a fucking quote unquote up and coming DJ and wanting to play more often, one of the things that I've always kind of longed to have is a pair of CDJs at home, like just a pair of CDJs at home with a good fucking mixer. That'll be the fucking dream. So I could, you know, mix and fucking record shit until my heart's content, practice all the time. So that when the chance does come about to play a bigger place, I'm ready to go. This woman probably has a fucking sick setup, a sick studio, an amazing fucking pair of CDJs. Maybe even the fucking Virgil Abloh designed ones, the transparent ones. She probably has those. But you prefer not to play them, just let them gather dust, and then you turn up and play blindly. Like, I don't usually do it because I take all my gigs seriously. Like, even if I'm playing in a flipping pub, I'm preparing an entire set for it. You know, I'm taking all my fucking cables. I've got spare this, backup that, backup this. But even me, I've had some occasions where maybe I'm playing in a pub somewhere and I just, you know, haven't really practiced that much. And it's nerve-wracking pulling up because you're like, oh my God, is this going to go well? Is it not going to go well? I can't imagine the balls you would need to have to not practice and just turn up at Coachella. Not because this Coachella is the most amazing festival in the world, just because of the amount of people that she's standing in front of. That's like, what, 15,000 people or something? Can you imagine the balls you'd need to stand in front of 15,000 people knowing full well you haven't prepared your set, you haven't played or practiced zero, you're just going off vibes only. This woman is a better woman than me.
I'm trying to do the math, but they're kind of unmixable if we can't.
I'm trying to do the math.
I'm gonna go back to. Okay, the rest of the mixes are.
Actually, she kind of sounds like XQC. She has the same, like, inflection and annoying voice like XQC. Like, yeah, she sounds like XQC the streamer. Like, they have something about them is quite similar. Maybe it's the way they look. Who knows?
It's gonna be a bit crazy, y'all, because I under the last song about
Jordan. Tell a song.
And something in Record Box fucked up.
Or maybe Jordan Peterson. She sounds like she could be Jordan Peterson's daughter. Maybe Michaela Peterson, the daughter. Maybe her voice is too deep. Maybe what Jordan Peterson's daughter should sound like is Grimes.
It's kind of like, you know, won't somebody think of the DJs? Won't somebody think of the women? What am I going to do?
It's like, what?
Who knows what I'm talking about, so... The rest of the set isn't mixes, but it will be fun. Okay, let me try to get this actually... Oh, yeah. Where all the song tempos are double.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. Quite a saying that allegedly she blamed a lot of her tech issues on her ex-boyfriend. Again, that's fucking insane. To rely on, I don't know, from what I understand of Grimes, she doesn't have that much of a crazy tech setup anywhere she's playing. Yeah, I know she's into AI and all this sort of shit, but it's not that difficult what she does on stage. It's some sort of projection. It's something to manipulate her voice, something to play instruments through, maybe a MIDI player, maybe some sort of audio interface, whatever. It's not that complicated. So for her not to be able to know how to plug in, you know, whatever she needs to use into a fucking, you know, into an audio setup is pretty unforgivable, especially when it comes to CDJs. All you have to do is press play. She could have, if she wanted to, right, she could have just pressed, she could have played like she's just playing a playlist. Just have all the tracks, like have the tracks queued on both CDJs and then just play one after the other without even mixing. Just sort of using the levels as like a fade in, fade out. And it would have been perfectly fine. No one would have noticed. But
I'm trying to do the math.
The math, like what? What an idiot.
Speed and I have not practiced the
math. Exactly.
What are we going to do with our Serato? Exactly. What are we going to do with our Miracle Box? What are we going to do with our USBs?
Yeah, oh my God, Grimes.
Because I'm not fast at math. But I am going to... I am going to...
What are you going to do? Jesus. Right. You know what must be weird too? You know what must be also weird? The whatever stage she's playing on is probably the stage where a lot of people DJ. So it must be freaky to go there at Coachella as a fan and to hear someone's voice anyway. It's like, what the fuck? Why are you talking so much? Because I already know, like, if you check out Boiler Room and whenever there's like a set where there's like an MC, the comments are brutal, especially when they're black, obviously. But just in general, right? Dance music, electronic music people hate vocals. They hate vocalists. They hate MCs. So can you imagine how grating it must have been for that collective of people who hate people talking on the mic, hearing her like, yeah, so even with double track. It's like, bruh, shut up and just play the songs, man. However fast they are, however slow they are, just play it and make it work.
Let's try this again. Y'all, don't judge me for being bad at calculating things.
She's still talking. You gotta love her, man. She's a fucking mess.
You know what? Being bad at math is not a sin. What the fuck? That was actually me. That time, that was actually me.
So allegedly, you know what's really funny though? Someone posted this clip, allegedly, of her back in the day. This is some from a person called It's Rocket. It's Pocket Rocket. They said, Grimes fucking up on stage is not new. She did the same thing in Mexico City with losing control over BPM, then constantly apologizing and then getting cut off mid-Genesis. That's a good thing, actually. I'm not going to lie. If I'm a festival organizer, a party organizer, and I've paid Grimes however much she gets paid for a booking fee. What is a booking fee? Let's see if people have it, actually. Let's see if we can find it. Grimes. Let's see if someone's got it. DJ booking fee. It's probably going to be like $10,000. Something stupid, right? What? No way. They're saying her fee is anywhere between $75,000 to $149,000. What? Who's paying that? God almighty. Fair play. Available. Let's see. Well, who's this one? This is Main Stage Productions. Okay, they've got the whole list of how much people gets paid here. People are getting paid 30 quid, 30 fucking thousand dollars an hour. God damn. Okay, cool. Well, if you pay her that much money, right? If you pay anywhere between like 75,000 to 150,000, you're probably within your right to cut her off if she's fucking up. Like, enough. Like, do you know what I mean? I already overpaid you. You're not going to ruin my fucking festival or my rave by paying this horrible set. So get fucked. So I can understand. That must be a really gratifying feeling as a fucking festival organizer to cut her off. Like, you know what? Enough with you. Go home.
I'm going to play you guys a new song.
She seems fucked
as
well.
Let me just, like, make sure I am in a technically correct situation. because that was a complicated situation. Now I believe this should work.
See, the songs are so good, though. That's a problem. The songs that she makes, her artistry is such a high level that you kind of want to put up with the mess, but God, that voice is so fucking grating when she's talking. I'm also wondering, right? I'm getting to a point where I'm wondering. I wonder if part of this mess that she does on stage is her getting bored of not being seen or heard. Because that's something that must be quite limiting for an artist, right? To DJ. Making the transition to be an artist or DJ must feel like a bit of a downgrade. It must feel a bit lame when you're used to like commanding the stage with a mic in your hand, singing, rapping, whatever you're doing, right? It must feel a bit like a downgrade to go behind the booth and just silently look down and be pressing buttons and playing other people's music. It's not the same. It probably, the euphoria, the hype, whatever, the adrenaline that you feel singing is probably way better, way different than it is DJing. So maybe the reason why she does all this shit and has all these technical difficulties because he gives her an excuse to get on the microphone. Hey, you remember me? It's me, Grimes. Remember? You love me, right? Remember me? The artist that you used to love? Like, that's probably why she does it. She just gets bored. Like, okay, No one's listening to me, not paying attention. Let me remind them who I am. But it does kind of remind me of this one time where I had a really bad malfunction where I was playing, I think at a hip hop. Yeah, this is something I don't do anymore. But when I was playing at a hip hop party somewhere in central London, I think this was back in the day when, again, like, you know, I've got a history of having very dodgy MacBooks. So I had one of these white MacBooks, right? So I had, I don't know if you guys remember the white MacBook. So I had one of my first MacBooks ever was a white MacBook. And obviously it was fucking secondhand as well, right? So I had this white MacBook that I used to use when I was DJing. And I guess it just wasn't powerful enough to run my DJ software and also plug into the audio visual to the mixer in the club. But I didn't know that because I was practicing at home. So I was using this MacBook from, I don't know what year this MacBook is from. What year is it actually from anyway? This white MacBook is from, what year is it? 2006, whatever that year. 2006, 2012, right? This white MacBook. I was using it at home to DJ on my MIDI controller. That's when I used to play with a MIDI controller. So I'd take my laptop and I'd have like a Pioneer MIDI controller. I think I had a Pioneer or, no, I had a Numark MIDI controller. I had an old Numark Mixtrack. That's the one I had. Yeah, I had a Mixtrack Pro. One of these. Yeah, that's the one I had. That one. This is a basic ass one. I think everyone that started to DJ would have had this mixer. It's a Numark Mixtrack Pro, right? Pretty basic, pretty run of the mill. So I had this mixer and my white laptop, and I was playing at this fucking place at like a hip hop party. And it went horribly wrong because for some reason the MacBook didn't have enough juice in it to work with the mixer that I was using in the club, right? So every time I plugged in, every time I started the fucking DJ software on the fucking mixer, on the laptop, sorry, every time I started it, the fucking laptop would shut down. And it kept doing it again and again and again. I was playing in front of a live audience. So I start my set and I play a couple of tunes and then the fucking software would crash. And it only happened then. I was practicing at home. I did it before. I recorded my set. Nothing happened bad. And the moment I went to go play in the club, it just kept shutting down. And then it got so bad to a point where after that fourth time, I just got told to leave. Because I couldn't play anything else. And it felt so fucking depressing to go back home with all my shit carried with me after only being out for an hour or so. But that also taught me a valuable lesson that I have to obviously carry backups, but most of all it kind of got me onto playing more so on CDJs, because I think back then I really wasn't confident playing CDJs. I don't even want to play on my MIDI player. But obviously the issue is that you have too many points of error. You have a MIDI controller that could fuck up on your way there. Like, you could go there and you could spill a beer on it. Some lever could break, whatever. It's too much points of error. You've also got a laptop that's old that could also break. So it's just, there's too many options there that could fuck up. But at least when you're playing on a pair of CDJs, all you have is USBs. And then obviously if you have a backup, you take maybe some CDs with you in case that kind of doesn't work. But usually backup, you know, a USB and a backup one and a CD is probably enough for you to be able to play in most places. And then even if it doesn't work, you can just blame the equipment, and the equipment isn't yours, so you don't look that bad and you'll still get your fee. But when you rock up with your own equipment and it doesn't work repeatedly and everyone's looking at you weirdly, it can get a bit mad. So that was one of my only nightmare sets I've had. And again, that was literally like a one-off because I always check my stuff and go through it before I leave. But actually when I was at the place, it just kept shutting down. It was absolutely crazy, man. Really, really crazy situation. But big up the Numark Mixtrack Pro. By the way, I also want to say, as an aside, I remember there was a time back in the day where people would kind of shame you if you rocked up to a gig and you had a fucking MIDI controller. That was like a thing. It's like, bruh, do you know how much CDJs are? Even fucking CDJ 800s, they're like £600 each. They're not cheap. So the people that could afford a whole setup in their homes, you know, they must have some wonga, and it's not the majority of us. So if you want the ability to practice your set or just to learn how to DJ and whatever, or just DJ for fun, MIDI controllers are quite good because, you know, they're an easy entry into playing. And also, I don't think that's a marker of whether or not you can DJ or not. I don't think it's a good sign. People say, oh yeah, if you use a MIDI controller, it means you're not good. That's not true at all. We've seen fucking Grimes playing on, you know, possibly she's up there on Coachella stage with probably four CDJs in front of her, a CDJ 900 or whatever else in front of her, right? The best monitors, the best speakers, you know, like whatever. She's got a fucking fan behind her to cool the system down and cool herself down. The best setup, and she's still fucked up. So this idea that MIDI controllers were like amateur is insane, because you have a woman there who gets paid, you know, 75 grand upwards to play, and she can't play on CDJs. Like, I'd much rather take some guy playing horrible YouTube rips of MP3s on his MIDI controller than having Grimes get on mic and say all her nonsense and try and fucking, you know, appease the fans or comfort them, even though she hasn't practiced. Like, the tools, I think in general, are not a reflection ever on someone's skill or someone's ability. You always look at the output. I think the tools of what people use are what they use. And I think, unfortunately for us, especially DJs, it's just an unfortunate thing that the equipment that we use is just so expensive, and there's not much competition. That's the issue too. Pioneer doesn't have much competition. They're the one monopoly, because that's the club standard gear, industry standard gear that everybody uses. But there's no one else that's making a CDJ that's comparable, that's cheaper. Denon make one, but they're quite expensive too. No one's buying a Numark CDJ, so they've kind of got a bit of a strangled hold on the industry. So if that's the case, the next best option, if you want to practice, you know, or just do your thing or have some fun at home, is to buy a MIDI controller. And buying one, I don't think is bad. It's a good thing, actually. It actually means you fucking care about music. And, you know, and whatever, and you're just doing it for fun, whatever, and you're honing your skills. And I've noticed myself, especially I've got a new one. I've got a newish one. I think I've got a Pioneer. Is it SSB or something? Is it SSB? Is that what I've got? Yeah, that's a controller I've got. Yeah, I've got this one. And I've noticed for me that it actually, don't get me wrong, it's not the same as playing on CDJs, but it does work. It does help. It helps. It's better than nothing. You get the opportunity to, like, you know, go through your tunes, fuck around, see how it works, whatever, maybe. So it does actually help. So for those of you out there that are, you know, struggling to get on and want to play and do your thing, you know, getting a pair of CDJs is not a good, getting a MIDI controller is actually pretty handy when you're first getting started. It is going to give you ability to kind of, you know, practice, do your thing. And then you could take those skills that you've learned, because the setup and the layout of it is kind of similar to when you're going to use an actual pair of CDJs in a club and an actual mixer. It's kind of like the same sort of thing. So once you kind of master this, you can master anything, really. So I love it. I fucking love it. Continuing on, we got this interesting news courtesy of the BBC. Regarding these videos, I'm sure some of you may have seen them. So on TikTok or just on Instagram, there's been this new trend of this guy, or I think a bunch of guys, going around different parts of the UK, main cities, London, Manchester, Liverpool, Newcastle, whatever it may be, and recording these nightlife videos where you just rock up your camera and you take videos of people going in and out of clubs, right? Or coming in and out of bars, just in the city center. And I don't know, at first they seemed pretty cool. They were like an anthropological study of society and the different trends, especially if you compare those videos to like people who record videos, you know, in some, you know, main street in fucking, I don't know, is that Texas or wherever that place is, in Austin or in Miami or in places like, you know, in Korea and shit, and maybe in places like Japan, and comparing it to other places in Europe. It's quite cool to see the difference in trends and the similarities and shit with people in nightlife. I guess for some reason it's now evolved into this other conversation around these videos being creepy. I never got the creepy thing because, you know, it's not illegal to film people outside in public. And if anything, like I said, if what the comments I saw were a lot of people saying, oh shit, there's actually quite a lot of flipping attractive women in England, because I think people always assumed for some reason all of our women look like fucking, you know, Susan Boyle or something. So they were quite impressed to see the range of the different types of women that you see out in London and shit. And just in general, just as a voyeur myself, it was just quite fun just to see people, you know, going in and out of clubs and doing what they're doing. But I guess if you're the women in the videos, it can seem a bit strange when you're like rocking up to go to a club and you see some white, it's obviously a white dude, but you see some guy with his tripod just standing there recording you as you're going in and out of clubs. It can be a little bit unnerving. So I guess now it's becoming like a thing. And the BBC have did this report where they're saying women are feeling unsafe after being secretly. And again, I don't think it's a secret recording. The guy actually uses, if I'm not mistaken, he uses an SLR with a really long lens. Like, it's not secret at all. Like, he looks very bait. I think someone took a picture of him. It's like a short, white-looking dude. He uses a really long SLR, and he actually looks like a fed. You know, it's not like he looks like he's blending in, like he's a hipster or something. No, he looks like an older dude who's just recording people. So for some reason, people don't like it, and they're obviously, I guess, now trying to get it banned. I don't know. It's fucking bizarre. It's, for me, it's like, I understand the women's part of it feeling unsafe, but it's also another example of why we're such bad vibes. Like, no one can just have some fun, you know. It's always got to be turned into this other thing. It's like, come on, bro. But anyway, let's read the article. Women in the northwest of England say they feel unsafe after videos taken of them on nights out without their knowledge have gained millions of views on social media and attracted a slew of misogynistic comments. So how are you going to protect people from how I know it's not nice to get misogynistic comments or abusive comments online, but how can you prevent that? It's almost impossible to prevent some guys from saying something shitty to you online, and especially if it's somebody else's video of you in public. It's like, what can you do? Like, what do you want? Do you want us to turn the internet into a police state? Like, be careful what kind of authority you're trying to welcome in, because that could have some really far-reaching ramifications. I understand why they're upset about it, but let's rein it in a bit. Police say they are now actively trying to catch the person making the videos. Why are they going to catch him to do what? To see other videos of other people walking down the street? Like, they are asking anyone who's been filmed to come forward. Meg 23 of Manchester was a victim of the disturbing social media trend. The makeup artist and TikTok influencer said she was filmed on a night out in Manchester. She said she did not realize she was being filmed until she was sent a link of the video. I didn't see him. I didn't know I was going to be recorded. I can't believe I'm being targeted in that way. He looked at me and thought, yeah, I'll video them. It's not that deep. He just stands outside of club. Honestly, I've seen the video of him. Someone took a picture of him. There's some videos of him where he's literally standing in the middle of the road. It's not bait. He has a tripod. He has like a big fucking SLR with a massive lens on it. It's not like he's recording you with like a fucking pinhole camera or something. The video footage, as you can see from the screen grab, is really good. Like, that's a lens that is able to bring in a lot of light, you know. It's capturing them in their full essence. Like, that's just not some, you know, run-of-the-mill thing. So if you didn't see him, it's because, you know, you're paying attention to where you're going, which makes sense. But let's not make it seem as like he was recording you secretly. It's like, And also, you haven't been this victim complex. I've been targeted. Come on, give it a rest. Meg said she was filmed while walking down Deansgate with two women she did not know. She had noticed that they were harassed by a group of men and offered to walk with them. I just walked with them to get a taxi, so we were all together. I just ended up having a little conversation with them. The video of Meg was posted later that night by a stranger. It's one of a dozen uploaded on a platform like TikTok and YouTube. The clips, which are often titled Manchester Nightlife or Liverpool Nightlife, have racked up millions of views, along with an abundance of misogynistic comments. I have no words, really, other than it's just made me feel a bit sick. Honestly, man, people are so fucking sensitive. So sensitive, it's unreal. I understand if like the videos are like, getting pervy, like you know what pervy videos look like, but somebody filming you from afar while you're on your way to the club is dumb, especially when you decided to wear what you don't like. I don't know if this, oh, it's a violation of what I'm wearing. It's like, but everyone's seeing it. So what's the difference between people seeing it in a club and someone seeing it on a video that I recorded outside? Especially if you're not being tagged, no one, like, I don't know. I think all this has been blown out of proportion, to be honest. Until there's actually a threat, trying to preempt the threat and trying to make it seem like this guy is a pedo or a creep because he's standing outside in public and recording. It's like, then if he's a creep, then what are we going to do next? Are we going to stop those guys who, I think people probably would though, those guys who ask people questions on the street and shit? Is that the same thing? Because they start recording you before they even ask you permission. So are we going to start with them as well, or is it just a guy recording these videos? I don't know. It's just not nice at all, and obviously not just in a selfish way, but also towards other women. Yeah, true, that's what you care about. All of them are really, really young. Isn't that more of their issue? Whose issue is it that these young girls are going out at night and then going to nightclubs? Shouldn't you be going to the clubs and telling them to stop letting young girls in so they will stop going outside so that he can stop recording? Oh god. Maybe even underage girls not knowing that they're being recorded. The videos of the girls feel like falling over and having their underwear. But it's not the same as that, though, because they're not showing their... Honestly, this woman is fucking pissing me off. The videos of the girls it's like falling over and having your underwear on show and stuff, then being posted online like that, something needs to be done about it. But it's not the same though, because you're walking down the street clothed in your outfit you're going out on. That's not the same thing as tripping over and everyone seeing your knickers. Like, what? Great, imagine the police say it's actively working to catch the people making the videos. Catch the people. It's one dude. they're acting as if he's fucking, as if he's Jack the Ripper or something, man. This motherfucker needs to relax. Officers are being briefed on the situation. If you want to do something, maybe trying to arrest the people that are leaving you the bad comments. But, you know, trying to arrest this guy, making it seem like he's fucking, you know, some serial killer is insane. A lot of people speak on their phone as though they're walking past. We don't know if they're videoing or not, if it's going up the street. So it'd be quite, oh, but that's not true. Okay, now they're making it seem like he's on the phone video recording them. That angle, this angle that I've got on screen now where he's facing three girls, that's not him pretending to record it on his phone. That's clearly somebody has set up a camera on a tripod or is holding it very still. That's not how you get a video of somebody. If you've ever recorded on the sly with your phone on your ear, that's not how the phone turns out. It doesn't turn out that way, the video. That's somebody recording it with quote-unquote professional equipment. Fucking hell, even the police are chalking out of their ass. We don't know if they're video or not, if they're going up the street, so it's quite hard. We don't know. It's easier to know. Come on, police officers. Anyway, PC Sue said one woman had approached him about being filmed. Exactly. What'd she say? She said he had a little, like, Ray-Ban glasses at the corner of his camera that flashed red. He had Ray-Ban and at the corner of his... So that's what a camera does. She said he had, like, Ray-Ban glasses on, and at the corner was a... Oh, they're saying he was recording it with fucking... Google lenses, the Facebook, the face fucking Snapchat cameras. So it's like the Ray-Ban, was it Ray-Ban Snapchat? I don't think that's true though. The footage of it is good, I've seen it, but it's not that good. This is an SLR. So they're alleging that the guy is wearing these glasses, these collaborations between Ray-Ban and Snapchat that have cameras in them that are really good. Now, before they look kind of clunky, but now they look really good. I don't believe it. I don't think that's true. I think he's actually just have a regular camera in his hand and he's just, you know, out here filming hoes. But yeah, I don't know, man. These girls are just complaining about nothing. See, one of the comments here on the actual post, somebody said, busiest STD, STI clinics in the UK. Never thought the UK has such beautiful women. So we have a problem with these. If you want to ban somebody, try and get whoever this guy is. And again, is that a crime to say this? Like to make this comment? Is that a criminal offense? Should you be locked up for saying busiest STD STI clinics in the UK? Like what? We're locking people up for speech now. Yeah, is that what we're going to be doing? Cool. Chief Executive Stephen Wiggins of the GMP City of Manchester Central District urged anyone who's been filmed off. He actually looks like he could do the filming. I'm sorry. Chief Stephen Wiggins looks like he's the one at the end of the camera, or is on the other side of the camera. So trusting him to deal with your issues is probably a bit risque. He's probably recording you while you're talking to him. We are very much up against it. We don't get that intelligence, that information coming from the actual victims' communities themselves. We intervened recently on a number of occasions where we had males acting suspicious in a city centre. So our plea for the organization, people to ring us if they see anything suspicious behavior in the city, and we'll make sure that we will be there. Charlotte from Trafford Rape Crisis. Jesus, what an organization. Trafford Rape Crisis is calling on social media platforms to shut accounts down. She said victim blaming nature of the comments made it harder. It absolutely is a direct casual link to sexual. What? She's saying there's a link to that to sexual violence. It absolutely is a direct link to sexual violence. Huh? These sort of victim blaming commentaries introduce another level of shame. That's because of barrier to women accessing support. TikTok and YouTube said that they have removed a number of videos and accounts related to the content, violating guidelines. A TikTok person said misogyny is prohibited. So what's the difference between this video and the people that filmed those like walking tours? What's the difference? The ones that do like, oh, walking through Reykjavik, walking through Krakow, walking through Prague, walking through, like, what's the difference between that and this? Exactly. Honestly, I don't know. I get it's unnerving. I get it's weird if you're a girl to see suddenly yourself on a night out, you know, because you don't usually get that type of footage of yourself, right, in general. You just basically go out and come back out. Sometimes you don't actually even take pictures of it, so you just want to go out, have a good time, and come back home. So kind of seeing yourself on video on a night out can be a bit weird, especially if you didn't record it. But I don't know, man. People need to relax. People need to fucking relax. It's not that deep. But again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm fucking wrong. Moving on. We've got this article here, which is really interesting, courtesy of Sky News, regarding Rishi Sunak's interesting pledges in order to to get the vote for the next fucking election. Absolutely crazy. So Rishi Sunak, UK Prime Minister, said the following. He's pledging to remove benefits for people not taking jobs after 12 months. Now, on paper, I kind of agree with this. But when you get into a nitty gritty, this seems like a really odd thing to do and an odd way to combat, you know, unemployment, to combat whatever situation we're in financially, if it's a recession, whatever it is. It seems like an odd way to go about it. But it's interesting how whenever they want to try and claw back money, governments and stuff, the people that get punished the most are the poor. It's always the same thing. It's never taxing the rich or whatever it may be to claw back some funds because you're going through a bad time. It's always, let's attack the poor first. They're the ones that always have to pay the price. And they end up paying the price in a big way. So the article says as follows. People who are fit to work but do not accept job offers will have their benefits taken away after 12 months, the Prime Minister said. Outlining his plans for reform the welfare system if the Conservatives win the next election. That's a mad thing to outline, right? Where everyone's hungry, everyone's going through some sort of struggle, and you're saying, hey, if you vote for us, we're going to cut your benefits as like an incentive. Most people aren't going to vote for this because it seems a bit mad, but you never know. Outlining his plans to reform the welfare system if the Conservatives win the next election, Rishi Sunak said unemployment support should be safety net, never a choice, as he promised to make sure that the hard work is always rewarded. That's true. I agree with that. It should be a safety net and not an option. But unfortunately, with how hard it is to fucking even get entry-level jobs nowadays in most places, service industry jobs, and the fact that people get taxed an insane amount of money as they gain more experience and start to earn more money, those people that do the whole, you know, what you call it, benefit scams and shit, I see why they do it, because there is little incentive to actually get a legit job when after you get taxed, you end up with fucking £900 when you could do the same thing just sitting on your ass and scratching your balls, just claiming benefits. You know, that's the issue. So if I was the Conservatives, to really try to kind of sweeten this deal, I'd be like, hey, this is one side of my proposal. I'm going to cut benefits and I'm going to make sure that if you don't take a job after 12 months, your benefits get cut, so you get forced back into work. But I'd also say I'm going to lower the tax bracket or the tax amount that you pay if you earn over a certain amount. So that would give people an incentive to get back into work. Because at the moment, looking at the UK tax bands, right, look how fucking crazy this is. In the UK, if you earn between 12,517 per year to 37,700 per year, you get taxed 20%. But in the moment you start to earn over 37,000, which I think a lot of people do, because, you know, if you work long enough in the UK, you've got enough experience and you're not a dummy, it's easy to get a salary over 38, over 37,701. It's not that difficult. This is usually people's like first mid-level job with a bit of responsibility and shit. So a lot of people are making this amount, 37 plus, but then they're getting taxed 40%, which then, weirdly enough, makes your take home shit, because then you end up not really getting what you should be getting out of the more you're fucking earning. And sometimes it's probably more beneficial. Like I've done in my past when I've worked and stuff, I've sometimes purposely gone for jobs that I'm probably overqualified for, just because it allows me to sit at this tax bracket. And it also allows me not to have as much responsibility, and I can kind of come in and go, right? I can kind of, you know, clock in and clock out type of thing. But obviously for the company, it's not a good thing. For me, career-wise, it's not a good thing because I don't really get to push myself or learn new skills because I'm kind of, you know, operating under my level. For the company, they don't get to a chance to kind of exploit my skills and get the most out of me in order to kind of help their bottom line. And everybody kind of suffers. So if the government actually said, hey, we're going to cut benefits, cool, but then we're going to lower the tax bracket, let's say to 30% over this and amount, that would make it quite appealing. But just telling people that are on benefits and struggling anyway, after 12 months, if you don't take a job, you're just going to get back into fucking, we're going to take away your benefits, doesn't do anything. It doesn't solve the issue, in my personal opinion, because there's, you need to kind of address the reason why these people are on fucking benefits over 12 months anyway. Like, what the fuck is going on that they can't find a job within 12 months? Yeah, that's what you need to figure out. And then when you see that, you probably realize that just taking away the benefits after 12 months doesn't actually address the issue. But again, I could be wrong. Mr. Sunak said the government would be more ambitious about helping people back to work and more honest about the risk over medicalizing the everyday challenges and worries of life by introducing a raft of measures in the next parliament. They include removing benefits after 12 months for those deemed fit to work but do not comply with the conditions set by their work coach, which is fucking funny. Like, it's hilarious as well because they're assuming you're getting offers. That's the funny thing. They're assuming people are getting offers within 12 months. There's probably people there that haven't got offers in 12 months, maybe even over 12 months. So in order to, you know, in order to get the job in the first place, you need to be applying, getting interviews, which is obviously not also guaranteed. It's just a funny way to go about doing things. Another one, tightening the work capability assessment so that those with less severe conditions will be expected to seek employment. A review of the fit note system to focus on what someone can do to be carried out by independent assessors rather than GPs. I guess this is introduced because, from what I led to understand, I didn't know this is a thing. There are people in the workplace, especially in the UK, who definitely exploit the sickness thing because we're quite, depending on the company you work for, the UK is quite lenient when it comes to how long you can be off sick. I think it's like 2 weeks or something, which is quite wild. So a lot of people are probably exploiting that, taking a piss, especially post-pandemic. You could imagine people like, you know, lying about having COVID and shit or having long COVID and taking mad amounts of time off. So that's obviously not good. Changes to the rule so someone working less than half of a full week will have to look for more work. Fucking hell, they want everybody out there on the fucking, you know, they want everybody out there in the mines, innit? They don't want anybody sitting on their ass. A consultation on PIP to look at eligibility claims and target support, such as offering talking therapies instead of cash payments. Talking therapy, yo, when people the last thing you want when you're poor is therapy. You just want money, you want food, you want a warm blanket. Introduction to the new fraud bill to treat benefit fraud like a tax fraud. Honestly, bro, can you first arrest white collar criminals, please? What's happening with the fucking Royal Mail and all that scam? Maybe put those guys in jail first instead of jailing to make fucking benefit fraud the same as tax fraud. It's fucking wild. There's going to be loads of mums around the country going to prison for like 20 years because they put on a claim that they've got 4 kids instead of 2. Wow, bro. Maybe arrest some of these fucking, you know, MPs and shit. Like that woman who had a council house and sold it. You're not meant to sell it. What the fuck is going on here? He insisted the changes were not about making the benefit system less generous, adding, I'm not prepared to balance the books on the backs of the most vulnerable. I'm not prepared. I'll say, I thought he said, I'm prepared. Or I thought he said he is prepared. That would have made me laugh. He said, I'm not prepared to balance the books on the backs of the most vulnerable. But you are doing that, you fucking dickhead. Instead, the critical questions are about eligibility, about who should be included, who should be entitled to support, and what kind of support best matches their need. Honestly, man, they are brutalizing people out here. But Labour said that it was the Tories' handling of the NHS that had left people locked out of work. And disabled charities called measures dangerous. Yeah, it's fucking crazy. It is fucking crazy. But, you know, I guess they're trying something. I guess they are trying something. All right. Let's talk about this. So, I've mentioned earlier on Hora, the radio platform, the live streaming platform in Berlin, went through a bit of an issue. where in the past they were accused of, rightfully so, of basically deplatforming people and essentially co-signing the genocide that's occurring over there in Gaza by telling DJs that were playing and showing support for Palestinians to remove their scarves, remove their t-shirts in support, you know, whatever it may be. It was pretty crazy and a really dumb misstep, because even though the founders of Khor are Israeli, and I think one of them or both of them served in the IDF, I understand the conflict of interest that they have. But considering how fraught the situation is over there, considering the videos that we keep on seeing, just considering the brutality, the violence, the amount of people dead, I think at last count, I saw like 30,000 Palestinians have died during the war. You know, large scores of Palestine are completely been reduced to rubble. There's this video that I've just recently seen, actually, that features Palestinians, you know, swimming out into the fucking raging ocean to go pick up, you know, the aid that's been dropped from fucking planes, right? And to carry it safely back so their families and so they can eat. You see visions and videos like this and you think to yourself, fucking hell, bro. The situation over there in Palestine is really fucking crazy and really sad, really fucking tragic.
This is the people of Gaza. You can see how much dangerous the situation here. They are just literally dying.
And the thing about this as well is that this is actually the safest way to get aid to them. Because if you try and drop this aid inland, there's a danger it might land on somebody and kill them, which has happened a few times, especially during the stampedes. And if you then decide to drop it, you know, too far out into the ocean, people might die swimming trying to get it. And of course, there's the other danger of Israel kind of firing missiles and kind of shooting down the aid in the first place. And that also is kind of wasting, you know, the food and whatever that's being sent there. So the situation is incredibly fraught, is incredibly sad, and just really tragic to kind of see. It's really, 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 really bonkers. So if you're Khor, I just can't understand why you would go as far as trying to remove people's t-shirts and stuff when they're trying to show solidarity and support for people who are going through what they're going through, right? It's really, really crazy. So with that being said, they decided now to kind of change the narrative and basically pretend to be like supporting Palestinians and have this compilation CD that they're putting out, which is basically titled Khor for Palestine Volume 1, or I guess featuring various artists. And the idea behind it is to have all these different artists in, you know, in electronic music, one of them who I'm a big fan of being Matrix Man, and a few others on there, you know, putting specific songs on there and obviously selling the compilation, and whatever money's raised could get sent to a charity, you know, and whatever it may be. The issue now has come. Obviously, this is very, you know, tasteless, very heavy-handed. Also doesn't address all their missteps they did in the past. And it just feels a little bit fake and a little bit fucking disingenuous in the first place. To make matters worse now, the update is even more infuriating, right? Is that the charity that they alleged to kind of linked up with to kind of support in support of their compilation called Heal Palestine made it abundantly clear on social media that they have nothing to do with this. They put out a statement on their Instagram, and I think Khor now have kind of abided by it, that they have absolutely nothing to do with this and they want nothing to do with it. So Khor are trying to do the right thing, but they don't even do the right thing of contacting the charity that they want to get in touch with. They just decide to do it anyway themselves, and then just hope for the best going forward. Like, can you imagine how fucking weirdly misplaced this whole gesture is? It just goes to speak to the lack of care that they have anyway. They don't really give a fuck. They're just trying to appear like they give a fuck because the boycott is clearly hurting them. Because I hadn't really paid attention to what was going on post the first time they were deplatforming people. Obviously, I saw it. It's like, oh, that's fucking horrible. But I hadn't really been checking Khor that much. But I guess the reason why I haven't been checking them is because they haven't been making anything worthwhile, because all the big DJs or the ones that we all know and love and respect have all decided to boycott and aren't on there anymore. So they probably still have people on there still playing. Obviously, they have a full lineup. There's no DJs, you know, there's too many DJs out there who don't get a chance to play, who'd be willing to play for Khor regardless of what they do. But the ones that matter, the ones that move the needle, the ones that actually get them the views and whatever, they're the ones that are kind of staying away. And I guess they're feeling that. And maybe even locally, maybe it's affecting their ability to put on events, whatever. They're definitely feeling something, which is why they did this. It's just a reaction to try to get back on people's good books. But obviously it did terribly. And now they didn't even fucking partner up with the charity, actually, like they said they did. And the charity said, we had nothing to do with them. So now Khor had to put out a statement underneath the, you know, the, as a caption to kind of clarify what's happening, because they made it seem like they were working in cahoots with the charity, but now it's not really that case. So, Hawes update. The team at Heal Palestine reached out to us and declined the donation, but they did not specify why. It doesn't matter why. Like you made it seem like you were in cahoots with these people, because they said, oh, we're going to give all the proceeds raised for the, you know, again, it's a dumb gesture, because who the fuck's buying a fucking whore compilation anyway? I love the artists featured on there, especially Matrix Man, but no one's buying, you know, a compilation with like TV out, like really in 2024. We're like, we don't give a fuck. But anyway, regardless. And how many tracks is there anyway? An 11 track compilation with those names. You need some more. You need probably a couple of Hector Oaks and stuff. This is not enough. So the team at Heal Palestine reached out to us and declined the donation, but did not specify why. According to their website, there are two ways to donate to Heal Palestine: starting your own unauthorized fundraiser on their page, or donating funds directly to them. So I guess they're trying to argue, we don't need your permission to give you money. Right, we're gonna use, because I guess that's what they're doing. They're using Heal Palestine for clout and to give them validation. But they're also saying, hey, do you want to really turn away money? Like, you purport to be for Palestinians, you purport to be for the people of Gaza. Do you really want to turn away free money, or quote unquote money, to give to people that they could use it in need? Oh, it's gonna be a bit touchy, isn't it? But I just love the line, but they did not specify why. They sound so upset. Starting your own authorized fundraiser on the, sorry, according to their website, there are two ways to donate to Heal Palestine: starting your own authorized fundraiser on their page, or donating funds directly to them. We intended to choose a second option. For many of our past fundraisers, we haven't contacted the organization beforehand to ask for approval or permission to send these funds, as many of them have the option to receive funds directly online. Well, they say they don't want your money, bro. So what are you going to do? Are you going to send it to them by force and then try and put them in a corner, back them in a corner? Because if they give the money back, some people are going to say, no, just send the money to the Palestinians because they need it. If they say that, if you publicly state that you're going to give them money and they publicly state we don't want it, you just have to take the L. Honestly, who's in charge of Hawes PR? Do they have a PR person? Do they have somebody doing that? Because this is shocking, the amount of own goals. Like, part of me, right, can sit here and say, even though it sounds insane, I can understand how conflicted they kind of were in the beginning. If they actually are Israeli. Again, I would love somebody to fucking let me know why there are so many Israeli people in dance music anyway. It seems wild how there's just like so many people from that one part of the world that are really not even a part of dance music, the scene. They're actually in the industry. They own the clubs, the labels. Like, it's interesting, like, how that is. I don't think that's the case in any other genre. Like, obviously there are, you know, people of that denomination, specifically Jews, in most music, but I mean, like, as artists, as DJs, there's so many Israeli people who have been techno and house music and just dance music in general. So if anybody knows why that is the case, definitely let me know in the comments if you do. But anyway, that being said, I understand in the beginning of the conflict, if they felt conflicted about having people on their platform with incredibly pro-Palestinian messaging and slogans and shit on their shirts, when their people themselves, right, you know, Israeli people are also suffering in the real beginning. But since the beginning, since that hallowed day that, you know, there's a lot of Israeli people kind of cling to in terms of the horrible scenes at that music festival that everyone condemns, obviously. But since then, you know, it's been kind of lopsided, the amount of people who passed away in terms, I mean, it's not, you know, there is nothing to relate there. There's no correlation. There's no balance or anything. It's obviously mostly Palestinians who are losing their life, mostly women and children. It's fucking crazy. It's mostly civilians also, by the way, just as a broad term. So I understand in the beginning feeling conflicted. You got this platform that you own, seeing people basically, you know, essentially taking the piss out of your people, on t-shirts and shit, and maybe offending you. I get it, feeling conflicted, but telling them to remove their shirts and shit, that's a bit too much. We're not gonna upload your video because you wore this shirt. You have to take off this scarf. It's like, what the fuck, bro? Such a terrible public relations, PR, you know, bad move. Really is. I don't know what they're doing. I really don't know who's managing their PR, but they're doing so horribly at it. And now it's almost like they're trying to what? Battle or fight this charity heel? It's like, if they don't want your money, like they can then decline it. And I think actually trying to forcefully send it to them when they've said they don't want it is actually worse, to be honest. But what do I know? To be clear, we never announce a collaboration with Heal Palestine or fundraiser in their name in our communication. However, we purchase them. Okay, this is the thing though. Again, I don't like this from Whore. They don't seem to have any accountability or take any ownership. You didn't say it was a collaboration, but you made it seem like it was. You know what you did. Everyone does it. I think everyone that does like charity stuff kind of does it the same way, wording wise. It depends, I guess, like whatever. You know what the lingo is when you're trying to push something. They didn't specifically say it was a collaboration, but they did make it seem like it was. So come on, don't take us for fools. Our intention is to advocate for security, safety, and to help for everyone. No, it isn't. At this moment, we chose to help those who are currently experiencing tremendous suffering, as we always strive to contribute to what we can. You know what's funny? They're only doing this now because the numbers of deaths on the Palestinian side are just so crazy that even the most staunchest Zionists nowadays are basically walking back their stances now. They're kind of like, okay, maybe we should be brokering some level of peace or ceasefire because this is getting crazy. Are we literally trying to exterminate these people? Because before it was, you know, tit for tat kind of thing, but now it's gone so far that even the most staunch Israelis out there are like, this is too much. So I wonder if Hor would have done this anyway, if it just would have continued being quite, you know, tit for tat kind of thing, but for lack of a better term. I don't think so. They're only now starting to reverse course because we're seeing videos of like women and children splayed all over the floor when a fucking hospital gets blown up. Or even worse, that footage that we saw of drones, you know, blowing up innocent civilians just walking across the fucking deserts. It's like, what the fuck is going on here? These people don't look threatening. They don't look like they have their bearing arms. They don't look like a fucking militia. That's not Hamas. So because of that, now they're basically feeling a little bit bad, basically, and trying to walk it back. It's like, that's too late now, bro. Regarding the ongoing fundraiser, we have already contacted several humanitarian organizations and work in Palestine to ensure that our contribution will be received. We'll keep everyone updated. Yeah, do that. Do that if you want to. Keep it to yourself. We don't give a fuck. Thank you for ongoing support and for the people who brought complication together. Your contribution and actions are making a change. To those of you who wish to understand our stance further, please read the pinned statement on our page. Yeah. By the way, blessings and Godspeed to the people featured on this list, because their comments must be crazy. The people featured on here must be getting absolute pelters. Let's see if I can see. It's somebody tagged here, because I bet you people must be going after them as well. Who's on here? Let's see Adja. Let's see if people, are people saying anything crazy to this person called Adja on their Instagram? Have they turned off their comments or something? Let's see. Because Hora now, you know, not only fucking up the whole thing, but they're also putting other people in bad positions. Because now people are going to be attacking them, making them feel like, you know, they are complicit in fucking horse shit. So this is, I think this is a pinned post, isn't it? So I don't think there'll be any comments on there. That's a pinned post. Right? 1 hour ago. What does that people say? On a Sunday night. Okay, cool. Nope, that's a pinned one. That's not the one. That's from March. Okay, she doesn't have any updated things. So no one's really attacking her, I don't think, so far I can see here. She's gotten away with it. So big up Adja. Adja's gotten away with it scot-free. Good to see, actually, to be honest. That would have been sad if she was getting attacked in the comments for lending a tune to a compilation that probably no one's going to listen to anyway. Yeah, no comments on there recently. Let's see one more person on here. Let's go for Tash Safari. Let's see if anyone else said anything to them. Because this is going to be a wild thing. Let's see. Did Tash Safari get any comments about lending her name to a compilation? Oh, comments have been limited. Yes, okay. Something may have happened here. Comments have been limited. Maybe something happened. fucking hell. Look at Whore making people's lives hell that have nothing to do with what they're doing. Fucking hell. Yeah. Maybe something's happened. Maybe it hasn't. Who knows? Either way, just a terrible own goals continually, it feels like, from Whore. They don't seem to learn their lessons. And it just seems to get worse and worse for them going forward. Let's actually see my guy Matrix Man. Let's see if he's got... Did people give him any powers? He'll probably give it back to you, to be fair. He's not afraid to get into a bit of a tit-for-tat online and shit. Did anybody give him any powers? He's got a massive head, innit? My guy Matrix Man, his head is really big for his body. Look at his fucking dome. Look at his dome. Let's continue there. Nope. Okay, no angry messages from people. My favorite album so far. You're a genius. Wickedness. Okay, fair play. Fair play. Fair fucking play. So, I'm eager to see what happens with Hall going forward. Whether they suffer the same fate that Boiler Room suffered, where, you know, reputational damage just seems to be irreparable. But I think Boiler Room have done pretty well in terms of bouncing back. I feel like people don't really give them as much stick as they used to. Maybe it helps that the founder left, that founder that everybody hated at Boiler Room, the guy with the blonde hair, I forgot his name. I think they hated him just because he was rich or something, I think. Or maybe his family are Tories, I don't know. But either way, I think that founder's left now. I think he sold it to Dice, didn't he, Boiler Room? So maybe that might help. Maybe Horn need to sell the platform to Boiler Room or somebody just to kind of distance themselves from their Israeli founders. Because the same thing happened to E1. I think people are going to boycott E1 until E1 changes ownership hands, because, you know, they know who the founder is. They know he went literally to fight in Gaza recently. So I think that kind of stink is just impossible to shake off, especially when you keep doing these low effort, hanging fruit, virtue signaling nonsense to try and appease people. It just seemed disingenuous. People can see through it. And it's obviously bullshit. It's obviously freaking bullshit. Moving on, and to end, we have to continue and clarify and play and let it be known that Drake Push Up has officially released on all streaming platforms. Drake Push Up is now, or Push Ups, is now available on all streaming platforms. It's official. No more leaks. Drake put a stamp on it. He put a name to it. He directed his bars directly at people. He didn't speak in innuendos or in hints or whatever. It was very direct. It was very upfront. And now the pressure's on Kendrick and others to reply. There's a rumor going around now that allegedly Kendrick is aiming to fucking drop an album in May. With the reply in it, which I think is too long. He has to drop right now. He can't wait until fucking May. That May shit isn't going to run. But that's allegedly the fucking rumor that's existing out there. And that's courtesy of the New Rory and Moore podcast. New Rory and Moore sat down and they said that they heard through the grapevine that allegedly Kendrick wants to drop in May. That's when he's going to have his reply and clap back to the Drake Push-Ups record. This is them speaking about it.
I really thought Kendrick would have replied by now.
I am hearing that he has an album coming in May. I see that being a smart move, and why not put the response on an album?
But why?
Well, if you let Drake tell you, you know exactly why.
That he was just using this because he needed it?
I said if you let Drake tell you. They've been calling me a dick rider for like 12 days. Out of song. I'm tired of riding dick. I'll let y'all tell it. Ready?
I'm tired of riding dick. It's funny. That's a weird way to go about it, isn't it? Usually war, when it comes to beefing, it's usually dub for dub, record for record. It's never done this way. You never just like, oh, I'm going to diss you on my album. Wait for my album to drop. It's like, that's corny. That's almost like click the link in bio to hear my opinion, or follow me on Snapchat to hear my views. It's like, go away. Just tell us what you think right now. Don't try and take me to OnlyFans or to Patreon. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like that's what he's doing. It's almost like he's doing the Patreon way. I don't like that. So I would prefer it if you just like replied back. But I guess this, you know, maybe this goes back to what people are. Some people are suggesting that Kendrick didn't really think Drake would reply the way he did. He kind of fucked him up in that regard. He didn't expect it. So maybe that's why he's taking way longer now to reply, because that reply from Drake was very direct, was very thorough, was very detailed, was very rude. If you read between the lines about who he's talking about and the stuff that he's mentioning and shit, he basically said, you know, Kendrick's like an errand boy for Top Dog, which I understand. I believe the errand dog for Top Dog thing. I'm not going to lie. Top Dog does look like somebody that would fucking take 50% of your publishing. Now that I've been familiar with LA guys, especially Pun from Community and stuff, LA dudes are kind of grimy. LA gangbanger dudes are very grimy. They're manipulative, like the Whack 100 is a good example. So I wouldn't be surprised what Drake said about him, you know, Kendrick allegedly having to pay $50 million to get out of Top Dog, and he still has 50%. I think Top Dog still takes 50% of whatever Kendrick makes doing his own thing. It wouldn't surprise me if that's true, because he looks like the type of guy that would take 50%, you know, and would make you pay him $50 million to get out of the deal. regardless if you're friends or not, like some, you know, real bully boy shit. So I'm actually wouldn't be surprised that being true. Not be surprised that thing being true.
Keep hearing about this album coming in May.
I just spoke to a little birdie.
What type of bird? Was it a butterfly?
It was a blue jay, I think.
Can butterflies be?
Oh, wow.
In the
Yeah, the mention of the wife thing was wild. The mention of the wife thing was wild, but I love that level of rudeness. That also explains to me why J. Cole didn't want to get involved, because he knew where it was going. He knew that somebody would say something about him personally that he didn't want to be out there, and he didn't want to be involved. Because I don't think anybody had any, because I think Kendrick did mention on some of his albums that he cheated a bunch. I think that's what the Big Stepper album's about, right? It's kind of like Kendrick's 444. He did mention about cheating on his wife, but I don't think anybody thought it was the other way too. I don't think anybody assumed or had a feeling or knew that his wife may have done it too in the background with allegedly the fucking security guard or something. But yeah, always fair in love and war.
Likely hypothetical event that Kendrick does not reply. Are we going to move the goalposts for him like we have a lot in the past? Or is this boogeyman persona done? And the way we spoke about Cole, where all these braggadocious bars don't hit anymore? You've had so much time to prepare. Why is it Thursday, about to be Friday,
well, to be fair,
we haven't gotten anything?
Exactly, yeah. No, the boogeyman thing definitely is gone, because, I don't know, like, I don't think it's a boogeyman thing is gone. I think people just underestimate how good Drake is. That's the reality of it. It's not even nut hugging. It's just the fact. Like, you don't become that good. You're not that popular, especially in hip hop. You're not that widely loved. You're not in everybody's fucking Spotify raps if you're not good. He's clearly good. He's clearly very high level when it comes to rapping. People just don't like it because it's packaged in a Drake package, and people just don't like him as a package. It's understandable. But take away him as a person, he's a really good rapper. And I think people are reminded of that. Like, oh, he's actually got, you know, he could actually go toe to toe, blow for blow with this guy. I think the idea that it would be a landslide was dumb. And it's way closer than people would realize. If anything, what it shows you is that, you know, Drake is probably on another level to him, because he can do what Kendrick can do. If he wants to do all that boom bap, introspective, you know, esoteric kind of backpack rap, he could do that. But can Kendrick do what Drake does? Probably not. That's the main difference between the two of them. So that's what probably gives Drake the fucking edge, if I have to say what my top two or top three is. But yeah, what do I know?
Kendrick, we believe, has been planning this for quite some time. And now that you're saying he may have an album in May, this was probably his rollout and has been prepped for it. Why didn't you come the weekend that Drake's this leak?
But yeah, regardless, I'm happy the fucking song's out. It's available now on fucking all streaming platforms. So check it out. As you can see it on the screen, check it fucking out. It's fucking hard. But there's this really funny and interesting fucking theory that's been floated out there. Courtesy of, let's see the account if I can find it on here. Courtesy of this account here. This account called... Where is it? If I can see it. No, there it is. This account called Almighty. So this person called Real AL or Real Almighty, right? Real Almighty. Real spell R-E-A-L. Almighty spell A-L-M-I-J-H-T-E-E on Twitter. He has this really interesting theory about why all these guys hate Drake. And it's a funny one, because there's probably some validity to it. Not all the way through, but probably is some. Theory why Drake may own a percentage of Kendrick and other people's publishing. Fans have started speculating and are trying to put the pieces together. So let's read the thread. Joe Budden podcast sparked the theory, the other day, that Drake may own a portion of Gamma Music Company and get splits from the artists signed to them. Besides Gamma, it's also possible that Drake splits from UMG artists. Here are some reasons as to why that could be true. First, let's look at the artists beefing with Drake and who they're signed to. Rick Ross is signed to MMG, Gamma, Nav, Republic, UMG, Weekend, Republic, UMG, Metro, Republic, UMG, Kendrick, Interscope, UMG, A$AP Rocky, RCA, Sony, Future, Epic Records. Now let's start with Gamma, owned by Larry Jackson. Budden says while forming Gamma, Larry told him his plan is to find the Avengers and create Content Mega House. Drake is speculated to be the Nick Fury of the Avengers, in that he's the one getting shit moving and happening. There's Larry Jackson, there's Drake, and there's Tim Cook from Apple. Keep in mind, Larry Jackson has known Drake since he worked at Apple before forming Gamma. Drake, Apple, and Larry have been good friends for years, with Drake even having an Apple Music deal. If Larry was going to pick anyone to be his Nick Fury, Drake makes the perfect sense. This is a quote. It says, meanwhile, Apple's head of content, Larry Jackson, happily gloated to Journal by saying that Drake's success in the streaming service was a result of him constantly promoting the album to both his and Apple's large audiences, suggesting Apple believes other artists should do the same instead of making deals with Tidal or Spotify. Here's a list of Gamma artists. Funny enough, multiple of these artists are people who Drake has recently collabed with or surrounds himself with. Sexy Red, Four Bats. Budden also called Larry Jackson during his podcast, and Larry commented that he thought the cease and desist was funny. On top of that, Ross partnered with Gamma in September 2023 for his collab album with Meek, released a month later. Drake hardly promotes his new music. No, that's not true. That's not true. Drake rarely promotes music on social and his peers. Now, Drake promotes a lot of music online. Drake actually does a good job of that. He does promote people's albums on his stories all the time. This isn't true. Besides that, Drake also has made it evident in various lyrics throughout the years that he owns ownership and partial ownership over some of these artists. So here are some quotes from Drake that he's alluding to. It says, I need some ownership if we press and go, because business is booming on behalf of me. I need a bit out of the apple like Adam and Eve. On Lil Wayne's Family Feud. Another one on Drake Away From Home. Who the CEO of Universal? They mistaken, because Google say Lucian, but that doesn't make sense. Who filling up the piggy bank? Who bringing home the bacon? Another lyric that might allude to it. Was that the only one? Is that the only one? That might be the only one. Cool, no more. Let's continue. Now let's focus on UMG. In 2022... Drake inked a huge $400 million deal with directly. I didn't know about this shit. $400 million deal with UMG, who owns Interscope, Kendrick's label. It stated that one of the biggest deals in history. Michael Jackson previously held the record of the largest music deal. His deal was $250 million. But that's mad. So that means, imagine if Michael Jackson was still around now and still relevant, what kind of deals he'd get. And also, 250 is probably 400 mil in like today's money anyway. 400 million. Fucking hell. No wonder Drake's albums sound the way they do. No wonder they're always a bit all over the place, like he's going through the motions a little bit. He's just too rich. How can you make a good, concise, quality body of work when you've got 400 mil from a label? Not including your streaming money, not including your show money, not including your merch money, not including the money you make from OVO, the drinks, the bars you own. It's just too rich. It's impossible to make good. And I think it's honestly impossible to make any great art after you've earned a certain amount. It's just not possible. I don't believe it. I think part of making great art is almost surviving. Is being on the breadline, is like suffering and shit. Without that, you don't really get it. So it's not surprising that Drake's not been able to really, you know, lock down that classic album that we're all kind of waiting for. Although I feel like For the Dogs was quite close. For the Dogs was quite close. Keeping the topic on MJ, we obviously know Drake compares himself to a pop king often. Michael Jackson also had ownership of ever several artists' catalogs. Yeah, true. When Michael Jackson bought the ATV catalog in 1985, he not only acquired rights to the Beatles songs, but also to the rights of Elvis, Bruce Springsteen, Rolling Stones, Cher, and Little Richard songs. Can you imagine the amount of money Michael Jackson made when he got those people's catalogs in the 80s? Elvis, Bruce Springsteen, or Bruce Springsteen, according to Brendan, Rolling Stones, Cher, and Little Richard. Gamma and UMG are owners of Republic and Interscope UMG. The Weeknd, Rick Ross, Nav, Metro, and Kendrick are all signed there. Could this be why they're all mad at him? Is Drake getting a piece of everyone's pie? I think this is partly true. There's probably some truth to this, but I also think it's just like every rap brief. It's also involving girls. It's which is jealousy, money, but also involving girls. It's just obvious. It's just too obvious. You know, this is the fact. Like, these guys probably get annoyed that their main girls, their baby mothers, their wives, their side itches just keep talking about this guy all the time. I think that's what drove Kanye crazy after a while. When Kanye was hanging around with Julia Fox and all those girls, it was probably getting on his nerves all of these, because, you know, that was probably the one time he hanged around with a woman that had other friends and shit, right? So he was around, like, regular New Yorkers, regular women, regular people doing their thing. So it probably annoyed him, especially, or even when he was with Kim. That house fucking loves Drake. I can imagine they're playing that shit all the time in the background. So if you're somebody that secretly hates somebody, but you don't, but your family doesn't know, but then they keep playing that person's music they secretly hate, I can see why you hate them, you know? Like, it could make a lot of sense, especially if their main girl is, like, playing them when, before you get to the house, she's got them playing through the fucking Sonos or the Bluetooth speaker. Like, I think that's probably the reason why they hate the guy. So, partly to do with money and also to do with the itches. But yeah, the full details of Drake's UMG deal never released, but it's given that this music best, biggest of a deal, it's possible Drake received more than just money. Yeah, this probably makes a lot more sense too. Maybe he didn't get just 400 mil. Maybe he got 400 mil and you got better splits. You got better, you know, percentage of like the streaming numbers that come through for his music. Because if you're Drake, let's say if you're Drake, right? And let's say you can demonstrate or illustrate that you are responsible for like 60% of the traffic that goes to Spotify. You probably want more of the money that they're getting from there, you know, because you're the one that's getting most of the traffic on that platform. Most people that are going to use you Spotify, the first song that they play is a Drake song, or within the first five songs, however you fucking rate it. So he's probably got a right or a reason to negotiate better terms for himself, because he's the one that gets most of the fucking leads. So that makes sense. And then maybe going forward, maybe they'll say, hey, let's not give you more of a cash advance at the beginning, let's give you more of a split at the back end. I could see that also. But yeah, regardless of what it is, Kendrick must respond. I don't care what it is, Kendrick must fucking respond, because the track is out there. It's in 4K. You can see it available now on fucking YouTube. There's no fucking denying that this is real. Everybody that was doubting it, like, you know, this fucking corny manager guy that was out here saying, oh, it's not real, the Canadian never responded after a decade and being dead to come outside, still has yet to officially claim the response. He's now taunting and attempts to garner reaction. If you enjoy microwave meals, that's on you. We preferred cooked food out here. Fuck off, whoever you are, DJ Head. You're fucking cornball. Well, the song is out now. What you saying now? What are you saying now? Okay, my friends, that is it. That has been the Agostino Zynga Show, episode number, 768. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's been a pleasure to have your company and to enjoy our time together. If you've enjoyed it too, please make sure you smash the like button for me and you leave me some comments down below. Or if you want to email me, you can via the links available in the show note description. But it's been a pleasure, never a flipping chore, to hang out. Obviously, if you're listening to it via the audio side of the podcast, you'll hear my tune of day playing underneath my voice. The tune of day today for me will be this remix, courtesy of DJ Academics' page, actually. Ice Spice Fisher remix, featuring Cash Cobain. So I'm sure most of you guys are aware of that tune. If you're not aware of that tune, then you need to get tapped in very, very flipping quickly, because this tune is a fucking slapper and it's probably going to be everywhere as soon as the fucking video drops, which I think is somewhere soon. So that's going to be my tune today. That's going to be playing underneath my voice right now. So thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll see you guys all again very, 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 very soon. Peace. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Got an attitude, but I'm feeling less, so I ain't mad at you. And I'm tired of two, and it's better too. I'm your baddest boo. So what you about to do? Top one baddie in a jaddy move. And my ass fat, cause I eat my oats and my vegetables. And my pussy fat, and it's creamy oats, it's like animals. I'm a baddie, so I know them other bitches ain't impressing you. And I've been a baddie since a younger nigga, this ain't nothing new. Why these niggas in my face? No, because I'm rich and my money blue. I don't care what niggas say, cause I'm really paid, I'm untouchable. Making bitches wanna hate, she see me and she get uncomfortable. Make a nigga wanna play, say I'm pretty and sexy, I'm munchable. I don't wanna rush with you, got a crush on you, wanna bust on you. Nigga got me in the mood, you don't fuck with me, then you fuck with who. And I brought a baddie too, she already ooh, giving Betty boo. I ain't calling you my boo, nigga, what you thought I was feeling you? For sure. She brought a dick like I was a flu. For sure. Not a W. For sure. You gon' make a baddie boy.
the shows. Got an attitude, what you better say, so I ain't mad at you. Ain't tell it to what I gotta do to be having you. I feel like having no top 5 60 in a terrace too. In your ass fat, know you eat your rice and your cabbage too.
She a savage too, I'm a savage too, it's compatible. She was talking practice, had to cut her off, got her battable. I ain't chicken tender, if you call my brother, I ain't mad at you.
Fucking in the kitchen, we ain't even make it to the master room.
Met her in the trailer, switch, she's looking different, and she tatted too.